A 17-year-old vanished after his homecoming dance, and he was found only in his underwear in a Coweta County creek months later, and his killer is still walking free. It's been nearly 10 years now since Blake Chappelle's horrific and mysterious death, and it's still never been solved. Our Savannah Levins has been digging into this cold case and the search for the homecoming killer.
Blake Chappelle was the kind of kid who was friends with everyone, a huge heart, no enemies. And that's one of the many reasons his murder has remained a mystery.
He was one of the funniest people I knew.
Max Gibbs remembers his buddy Blake like it was yesterday.
If you were down in a bad mood, he would make you laugh somehow.
And Melissa Becker.
He always looked at the best in people.
Holds on tight to the memory of her little boy.
He loved people. His friends were so very important to him. I don't think he ever had an enemy in his life.
She also remembers the night of October 15th, 2011, sending her baby off to homecoming. And later that night, Blake calling from his friend's house where he was supposed to be sleeping over.
He said, "Mom, I had so much fun. It was, you know, the best day of my life. I got to hang out with my friends and dance."
What happened after that phone call is a mystery that's still haunting. Blake seen walking to his girlfriend's house and not long after leaving to walk back to his friend's, but he never made it.
The friend that he stayed the night with calls me and says, "Blake's missing." I'm like, what do you mean Blake's missing? Well, he went to his girlfriend's and he never came back.
The search lasted 2 agonizing months.
We started calling him and nobody could get in touch.
It's like he just disappeared off the face of the earth.
And then in December 2011, Melissa got the call. Her little boy had been found dead in a creek in East Noonan. He'd been shot and left in only his underwear.
My world stopped that day. I couldn't believe it. You know, I had hope that he was going to walk down that driveway.
Everything we've received has been run down and vetted and rolled out at this point.
Lieutenant Chris Robinson with Noonan PD took over the case in 2019. By then, they'd interviewed dozens of people, followed every lead, but never could figure out who killed Blake or why.
Without, you know, the community support and people who know something coming forward, it just makes it about impossible to get anywhere right now.
Blake's phone, wallet, and clothes disappeared. Police don't know if he was killed the night he went missing or if he was kidnapped and the killer dumped his body later. And they don't know who would have, could have done this. But someone out there does.
Somebody knows something.
And so now, a decade later, the plea for answers, for justice, continues.
He was just an innocent child. I just want to know why.
There's a $20,000 reward for this case. You can leave a tip by calling Noonan PD at 770-254-2355 or Crime Stoppers of Atlanta. And you can remain anonymous.
Welcome to the Catch My Killer podcast, and thank you for listening. This is Mark. Since 2015, I've written a weekly newspaper column about unsolved homicides and true crime for the Claremont Sun in Ohio. Before discussing this week's episode, I would like to take a minute and ask for your support. I'm looking for listeners to help support the podcast by buying me one $5 cup of coffee every month. This will help cover expenses that go with producing a successful podcast. If you can help, please visit catchmykiller.com and click on the donate link or on the buy me a coffee link. And if you cannot donate to the podcast, you can still help by sharing these stories with your friends and families through word of mouth and social media. Many of these cases could be solved if the right person provides a crucial tip. I would also like to give a shout out to Heather Cochran for her donation. Thank you for your financial support, Heather. I truly appreciate it. And that's enough of the coffee business. This week's story involves the unsolved homicide of a 17-year-old Georgia teenager named Blake Chappelle. It's been 10 years since teenager Blake Chappelle vanished, after attending a homecoming dance with his girlfriend, only to be found dead months later. Today, the case remains cold. According to his friends and family, Blake was friends with everyone. His mother, Melissa Chappelle, is devastated over the loss. Even 10 years later, she struggles to get through life without her youngest son. The memories of October 15, 2011 still haunt her. She said that Blake was so excited about attending homecoming with his girlfriend. After the dance was over, he would spend the night with one of his close friends. Once Blake got to his friend's house, he called his mother to check in. He told her that he had the best time of his life. Before she hung up the phone, she remembers telling him that she would see him the next day. Unfortunately, this would be her last conversation with her beloved son because he vanished and was never seen alive again. He was last seen in the morning hours of October the 16th, 2011. The story goes that he left his friend's house to visit his girlfriend. He then sneaked in through a window. The girl's grandmother overheard the young couple talking and then woke up the girlfriend's mother. They were angry at Blake for sneaking into their home in the middle of the night. Blake would leave his girlfriend's house and begin walking back towards his friend's house. He would never make it. The next day, the friend called Melissa and asked her if she knew where Blake was. She said, "He should be at your house with you." He then told her how Blake had left his house to visit his girlfriend and never returned. The friend thought that maybe Blake had gone home. Then in December 2011, 2 months after Blake's disappearance, Melissa received a phone call that no parent ever wants to receive. Blake's body was found in a creek in East Newton. He'd been shot to death and was only wearing his underwear. His killer had taken Blake's clothing, wallet, and cell phone. None of these items have ever turned up. This was most likely to dispose of evidence. Melissa has told me that Newton police haven't given her any information about her son's death, and they have kept the case under lock and key. For this story, I spoke to Melissa Chappelle, who is Blake's mother, and her sister Sabrina, who is Blake's aunt. Both women are pleading for witnesses to help solve this homicide. So go ahead and start off by telling me about your relationship with your son, Blake. And then I'd like to know how losing him has affected your family and what's going on with the investigation. So whenever you're ready, please go ahead and start telling me about your son.
Blake was born on February the 7th, 1994 at 11:11 a.m. And that was the hard one for me because I had one child before him. I had a cesarean with my first son. So to have a natural birth with my second was a shocker. He came into the world with both of us screaming. But he was just absolutely perfect. Head full of hair, dark hair, just an amazing little soul. He was the easiest, quietest baby any mother could have asked for. I'd have to check on him all the time to make sure he was still doing okay, because he was so quiet and extremely loving and caring, was very affectionate, which was different for me because my first son was very independent. He didn't like for me to do anything for him. He wanted to, all the firsts he wanted to do all by himself, tie his own shoes, learn how to walk. He didn't want, but Blake was the opposite. He loved the affection, touch, the attention, the hugs. He always had a smile on his face. And let me say, I was dating Blake's father just for a short time before I realized that I became pregnant. And his father didn't have any children, and he was already in his late 40s and didn't want children. After that conversation, I decided that I was going to keep Blake and do it on my own. So Blake never knew his dad until he turned 10 years old. And out of the blue, one day, I got a call from his dad, and he wanted to meet him for his 10th birthday. Through a few years there, they tried to create a father-son relationship. His dad lived in Florida. We lived in Georgia, and he would come and pick him up and take him out on outings and things like that. And the years went by, and Blake was not perfect. He was extremely charming. And he could charm the pants off of anyone. So the beginning of 2011, and a lot of people will remember it if they lived in Georgia, it was the year that we had the huge freezing storm that came through. It was just ice everywhere, ice storm. And there were several inches of ice on the ground in January that year. And I've got pictures of Blake on his little boogie board riding down the hill in the front yard, because we lived on a very tall hill in the neighborhood we lived in Lovejoy, Georgia. And fast forward to May of 2011, Blake was dating this little girl for about 6 or 7 months. And he had some problems with her parents. One particular day, Blake was homesick, and the little girl showed up at the door when she should have been at school. And she explained to me that she had called her mother and got permission to leave school because of some problems that she was having, the headaches and things of that nature. So I let her in the house, and she, around the time that the bus would have left to take her home, she asked if I would give her a ride home. And of course I did. And I knew something was up when she asked me to stop a block over from her house and let her out. I let her out and went back home. And the next thing I know, her mother shows up and knocks on the door. And her mother and her and Blake and I were standing in my garage. And come to find out, she had not had permission to leave school and come over to my house. I explained to her that what she does with her child is her business, and what goes on with Blake is mine, and I would not tolerate him being threatened or anyone putting their hands on him. He did not force the little girl to do anything. So a couple of days after that, I'd spoke with Blake and said, you really need to think about the situation with this little girl that you're seeing. And he explained to me, he said, Mom, I just feel really sorry for her. And he explained, she goes through a lot with her parents. And Blake's always been there for his friends, even for strangers. He would bring stray animals home, stray kids, walk in the door with some kid that he just met and say, Mom, he got locked out of the house because he was past curfew. Can you stay the night? This was a regular thing when we were living over in the Jonesboro, Lovejoy area. I don't remember the date exactly, but it was toward the end of May. I'd gotten into an argument with Blake because I had explained to him that if he needed something, just come to me and you explain to me if you need something. Well, I'll try my best. He knows that I would always try my best to help him. But he had tried to sneak this kid into the house one night. And I ended up catching the kid there, and I was really upset because all he had to do was come to me and say, Mom, this kid wants to stay the night, blah, blah, blah. I knew the kid, so that part wasn't too upsetting. But the next day, I ended up missing a piece of jewelry. And so I brought it to Blake's attention, and I honestly didn't think that Blake would have taken it. But I believe someone had taken it. And so I confronted him and the friend, and he's really upset. And he's like, I didn't take it. I didn't do it. And I just said to him, if you can't follow the house rules, then you need to just find somewhere else to live. And I'd never said that to him before. So he knew that I was really upset trying to figure out where this piece of jewelry was, because it was very expensive. He grabbed his backpack and he put some clothes in it and he called a friend. And I know the friend that he called, and the friend came over and picked him up and took him over to a subdivision in Jonesboro called Hunter Ridge. And about an hour and a half later, I called the friend and I asked him if Blake was there. And he said, yes, ma'am. And I said, okay, I knew that's where he was, but I just wanted to make sure. Explained to him that we had gotten to an argument. And I said, just please call me if Blake leaves and goes anywhere. I knew he just needed a little time just to calm down. Both of us did. And so he was there for 2 days. And I get a call from the little girl that was now his ex. He had been broken up with her for about a week at this point. And the little girl was crying on the phone, and she's wanting to know where Blake's at. And I knew how Blake had felt. I just didn't want any more added drama. So I told the little girl that he was staying with a different friend than where he actually was. She says, okay, and she hangs up the phone. Well, about 45 minutes later, I get a phone call from the little girl's mother, and she says, the little girl takes lipstick and writes, I hate you, explicit B, with lipstick on the TV in the living room. She's nowhere to be found. She left her phone at home, and the mother was only gone for about 30 minutes to the store. So she'd only been gone for about 30 minutes. And she's like, she asked me, she wants to know where Blake's at. Well, I told her exactly where Blake was because I knew that he hadn't spoken to the little girl. And she went straight to where Blake was, approached Blake, asked him if he knew where the little girl was. And of course, she called me back later and said, he said he didn't know anything about her being gone. He has not spoken to her and he didn't know where she was. Well, the friend that he was staying with called me on the phone and said that Blake had jumped on his bicycle to go and look for the little girl. Now, this was a big community. Hunter Ridge is a huge trailer park community. Blake was staying was right across the street from this park. And the friend called and said, Blake jumped on his bike and went to look for the little girl. But the little girl's stepdad is riding through Hunter Ridge, showing everyone a gun and asking where Blake is at and telling them to tell him if they see him that he's got something for him. There was probably 35 to 40 kids all congregated here and there. And Blake knew all of them. And the boy is telling me, the friend, this guy is running around with these two other guys looking for Blake, and he's got a gun. And I told him, I said, well, hang up the phone and call 911. Well, of course, the mother keeps calling me on my phone, and I'm doing all this off of a home phone. So I did have call waiting. So I'm switching between lines between the mother and the friend. And mind you, my son did not have a cell phone at the time. I had purchased him a cell phone before, and it was very expensive, and he lost it. So he only used the home phone. So the friend calls me back again, and he's basically screaming, saying, they found Blake and the little girl. And the little girl was on the back of Blake's bicycle, and they were coming to another friend of Blake's house, the closest house. Then later, Blake tells me he was just trying to get her to the closest phone to call her mom. Well, while Blake is riding her on the back of his bike, these three men start running for him. And his friend is on the phone with me frantic, saying they're chasing him down and they have guns. Blake later explains to me that the girl had gotten off the bike and was standing next to the bike. And one of the men had a hold of the handlebars and kept telling Blake to get off the bike. And Blake kept saying, no, let go of my bike. And granted, Blake knew all three of these men, one of them being the stepfather of the girl. I guess the stepfather came up and hit Blake in the face and knocked him off of his bicycle. Then he proceeds to pistol whip him, kick him in the face and the ribs. And I get this information from the paramedics that showed up afterwards. They beat him really bad. The responding officer to the scene got all the information. The paramedics explained that Blake had a pretty severe concussion, that he needed to go to the hospital. The police officer calls me at home and explained what happened and put Blake on the phone, and Blake was pretty upset. His friends had to actually carry him from where he had gotten beaten to the house, to the closest house, to call 911. Blake didn't want to go to the hospital, even though he had insurance, that it wasn't my fault and that I shouldn't have to pay medical bills for him.
After this incident, did you step in and make your son stop talking to this girl?
No, not at all. He had made that decision on his own. And then later, after we went and picked him up, he said, "She freaked me out, Mom, because when I found her, she was wearing all of my clothing, even his shoes. And there was not enough time for this girl to have walked from where she lives and for her stepdad and her mom to be in that neighborhood and for all of this to happen. It seemed like it was just a complete setup because he had broken up with her."
If they ever broke up, how did she manage to get his clothing and shoes?
I'm assuming that she'd come over while he was gone, actually, at the friend's, and said that she had some things of his. So I let her in the house, and she said, "I've got a couple of things that I need to get of mine." And I told her, I said, "Well, just go upstairs and put his things on his bed and get whatever it is that's yours." And I didn't take her upstairs to his room, which I probably should have. But she obviously got some of his clothing then, unless he left a shirt or something at her house. I can't envision him leaving a pair of shoes there. He's not going to take two pairs of shoes to her house. He said she really freaked me out because when I found her, she was wearing my clothes from head to toe. And she was just sitting on the park bench, which is right there where he was attacked. It was like it was a complete setup. Like they were getting revenge for her, for him breaking up with her.
What happened after the police got involved?
The responding officer took all the information and Blake explained to him that he knew all three of the men. And he gave them the address. And the officer called me later and said, "I tried responding to the residents. There was no one there. I'll try again in a couple of days." But this was right before the weekend. I believe it was on a Friday. And he said, "But as far as it stands right now, it'll be assigned to an investigator Monday morning." And I explained to him that I was pressing charges no matter what. The following day, I received a call from his friend, the same one he was staying with. And he said, "The stepdad is back in the neighborhood threatening everyone that if they say anything about what happened, that they would be next." So the day after that, I get a phone call and I have caller ID, which shows up on my TV. And it either said Jonesboro Police Department or Clayton County Sheriff's Department. I don't honestly remember which it said. I answered the phone and there was a man there and he explained to me that he was the investigator on the case. And this would have been a Sunday, I believe. And he had some questions. So he questioned me and then he asked to speak to Blake. And I put Blake on the phone, spoke to him for a long time and hung up. Well, 2 weeks went by. I didn't hear anything. No one called. And then I believe it was a Wednesday around the first week of June. I get a phone call from the police department. And this investigator proceeds to tell me that he apologizes that he didn't contact me sooner, but he was assigned the case, and then he went on a 10-day vacation. And I said, "I'm confused, because I already had the investigator call me." And he said, "I don't know who called you, but I'm the investigator." So I printed out my phone records and realized the person that called me had what they call spoofed me. They put in either Jonesboro Police Department or a Clayton County Sheriff's Department on my caller ID. But when you print your actual phone records, it gives the actual phone number from where that call was made. And it was the stepfather.
And you didn't recognize his voice?
Not at all. And something that kind of rang a bell in my head during that conversation with him was, I told him I was receiving phone calls from the neighborhood that the stepfather went back and was threatening everyone that if they said anything, that they would be next. And he said, well, why would he do that? Just real sarcastically. And I'm like, well, I don't know. You tell me.
Did you show the phone call log to the real investigator?
I did not show the real investigator my phone records because he made it clear that this was not going to be pursued, that I don't remember the exact conversation between the real investigator and I, because my mind was wandering at the time. I was so confused at what he was saying to me, because he kept saying, I spoke to this man, the man denies doing this, and there are no witnesses. I was stunned, and I explained to him that there were plenty of witnesses, and the EMTs have records that he had a severe concussion, and that this man had went back and threatened witnesses, potential witnesses. He says, well, I'm just telling you that he said he didn't do it, and there was no witnesses. So a month passes, and I receive a phone call from the same investigator. He says, can you please bring Blake down to the station? There's a few things that I need to finish up on the report so I can close this out. And I said, sure, no problem. We set a time and date, and I show up, and we're the only ones in the waiting room at the sheriff's department. There's police officers behind the glass, I guess about 3 or 4 of them. And he walks into the waiting room and says, are you Blake? And, you know, shakes his hand and says, all right, you ready? You're going to come up. I'm going to ask you a few questions. And I said, I'm going to go with him. He goes, oh, no. He goes, wait, how old are you? And he looks at Blake, and Blake says, 17. He goes, no, you're old enough to go up by yourself. And I said, no, sir. I said, he has a right, and I have a right, to be with him during any type of questioning. And he said, no, you're not going up. And he walks over, and he gets a visitor tag and slaps it on Blake's chest and said, you'll be all right. Just, you know, come on upstairs and we'll be back in a few minutes. And I didn't know what to do, because I know that these people had attacked my child, and now I'm being bullied by an investigator, and I know what our rights are.
You could have just told the investigator that you need to get an attorney and that you don't want him speaking to your son without one present. And they have to honor that. That is the law.
That's what I told him. He said, no, he doesn't need an attorney. We're just going to ask him a couple questions. He'll be right back. And I'm sitting there, and my mind is just blown, because I have been dealing with this man that, to me, just feels, honest to God, I have never felt someone feel as evil as this man was toward my son and me. Within an hour, he comes back down and he tells me that my son is being arrested for interference with an investigation. I lost it. I'm telling all these other officers, like, my child was attacked by men with guns and threatened, and he's being arrested. And this guy starts barking orders at me. I don't know what to do, because I've always respected authority. And I feel like I'm in a nightmare at this point. So this was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And before I left, I told the investigator, I said, I will see you in court. So they took my son down to adult jail around 4:30 in the afternoon. And when I got home and my boyfriend got home, we both called him back, the investigator. And I asked him point blank, I said, whose investigation could Blake have interfered with? Because Blake's investigation didn't start until 911 was called. I said, and the little girl was not reported as a runaway. She was only gone for less than an hour. So I pull up the online public information at the jail. They didn't process Blake until 1:30 in the morning, and they changed his charge from interference with an investigation to interference with child custody, which went from a misdemeanor to a felony. And I'm not a lawyer, but I don't see how you can interfere with child custody in a public place on a bicycle where the little girl is free to get off and on, and when he's only trying to get her to a phone to call her mom. Long story short, Blake spent 18 days in jail. They gave him a signature bond, and I told him while he was in jail, I said, I don't care what they bring to you. I don't care what they say to you. You plead not guilty because this is going in front of a judge. Well, at some point, I had called the state's attorney's office many times, and I explained to them what had happened. They said, you're not part of this. He's being charged as an adult. You have no right to any information. And I told them, I said, I'm going to call whoever I can call. I said, my right as a parent was violated and his right as a child were violated. Come to find out, I went and visited Blake, and he had a woman sign in as an attorney. She goes in and she introduces herself as his attorney.
Was she a public defender?
She just says she's his attorney. Yeah. I'm your attorney. Tell me what happened. So he tells her everything. And I had already looked at the public information and received the name of his public defender, which had just been assigned to him a couple of days prior. The woman that said that she was his attorney was Black, and his public defender was white. Come to find out, the state's attorney posed as my son's public defender and asked him everything that had happened before he went to his next court hearing. And that was the hearing where they gave him the signature bond. I was livid because I gave him the name, and I actually looked up the public defender that was assigned to him and explained to him what she looked like. And he explained to me what the woman looked like that came and saw him. And it was the woman that worked for the state's attorney's office. So Blake goes to court, gets the signature bond. He's out at 8 o'clock that morning. The judge had let him loose.
So what was the outcome of all this? Was he officially charged with anything, or was it dropped? Did he plead to something? What happened?
On October the 14th of 2011, Blake goes to court to plea. He pleads not guilty. The state drops the charges. But then his public defender calls and says, the state dropped the charges, but the stepfather picked the charges up. And I'm like, I don't understand. What does that mean? How can the stepfather pick up charges that the state dropped? I had to check Blake out of school on October the 14th for him to plead not guilty. And that's when we found out that this stepfather picked up these charges. When he pled not guilty, the state and the stepfather knew that we were taking it all the way. I didn't care what it took. We were getting this in front of a judge. October the 15th, Blake goes to homecoming dance with his new girlfriend that he had been with for about 3 months. Stays the night with a friend in a gated community. His girlfriend and the friend lived in the gated community. And him and the friend left the house. Blake called me on the phone because I had not agreed to him staying. I'd skipped over a few things. But after he was released from jail, I packed us all up in the middle of the night and moved us to a different county. We had been through a lot of things in just a couple of months.
For this part of the story, I spoke to Melissa's sister, Sabrina. She gave me her thoughts about what it was like to lose her nephew, Blake. And I also asked for her opinion about why this case remains unsolved after 10 years. I'd like to start off by asking you about your thoughts on your nephew and how his death has affected you and your family.
Okay, well, the things I remember most about Blake, my nephew, is just his loving heart. He was just a sweet, kind-hearted kid that would just do anything for anyone. He was just always willing to help. Anytime I had him over, he was always asking me what he could do to help and helping out with my kids who were younger than him. He was just fun and loved. He was just a kid. He loved to play games and he played video games like Guitar Hero. He was just amazing at it. Super smart, very handsome young man, and just had a lot going for him. It's just such a tragedy to see someone with such a bright future just tragically murdered the way he was. And it's been really hard on all of us. I can't imagine the hours that I've talked to my sister. I still just can't imagine the grief and pain that she feels. I know how much I feel as his aunt, and it's just unfathomable to me what she's gone through. And it really has put her in a deep depression. She's gone through so much emotionally and physically, and I feel a lot of it has to do with his death. It was very difficult when they found him and having his memorial and not actually having his body there, because I believe at the time the Georgia Bureau of Investigation still had his body. So we had to have a memorial without him there, which was really devastating as well. And it just makes the holidays, especially this time of year between October and December, super hard for everyone, because the time he went missing to the time they found him to the time we had the memorial was all within that October to December period. And all of us just struggle, and we don't understand why. He didn't have issues with people. He was a good kid, and he just went to a dance and had the best time of his life and snuck over to his girlfriend's house. And he's a teenager. That's what they do. And for him to not be able to come home is just a tragedy. And I realized that when he left that house, it was probably 2 in the morning, something like about that time. I'm not positive. But somebody somewhere saw something. Some friend knew where he was, or the friend he was spending the night with had to know like what, whereabout he was. And I just hope that someone comes forward and says something and is able to break the case, because it's been a really long time and it's just very tragic and sad. And yeah, I don't really know what else to say. If you can't put it into words what you feel, it's just beyond traumatic. I think a lot of people deal with traumatic situations in different ways. I think I've compartmentalized a lot of mine just so that I can move forward with my life. But I know it's at some point you have to deal with it. So I just hope Melissa especially gets, the rest of the family, but especially her, gets closure. My mother took this really hard because she was like Blake's second mother, even though it was his grandmother. She spent countless summers, and there was a time period that he stayed with her and she was very close to him. And she's also taken this really hard. And I just really wish that we would get some kind of closure. Nothing's going to bring him back. Nothing's going to make this any better. And we may not even ever know why. But if we could just find out who did it and just get the case closed, it would just be so much better for all of us.
I think the most difficult thing to understand about this case is Blake was such a young man when he died. I mean, he was only 17. It's not like he was 50 or 60 and he had lived the full life. His life just hadn't even started yet. He didn't get married. He didn't have kids. And whenever people die so young, that's what I always think about. His parents did not get the chance to become grandparents. And his parents will never get to see what he could have done.
That was the one big thing I thought about during his memorial. I was like, wow, we're never going to get to go to his graduation. We're never going to see him married. We're never going to see his kids. Like, none of that's ever going to happen for him. He was just a young kid, 17 years old, without a care in the world, just a teenager. And for his life to be taken the way that it was, it doesn't make sense and it's not fair.
And for whatever reason that he was killed, it was definitely ignorant. It's ignorant because he couldn't have done anything to deserve to be killed the way he was killed. And after speaking to his mother and speaking to you, It just doesn't sound like he was involved in anything that could have gotten him killed. I'm talking about illegal drug activity, or he was just going out with girls and having fun, doing the same thing that I did when I was 17 years old.
Exactly. That's what I said. He was a kid. He's never done anything to anyone that would even come close to deserving what happened to him. My Facebook page, my profile picture has been his picture probably at least 8 to 10 years since this happened. And I've always said I would never change my Facebook page, my profile picture, because until he gets justice, I don't feel like I should. That's my tribute to him, because it's just not fair. And you feel so helpless when there's nothing you can do. And you feel like you try to do everything you can. It's just when you're not getting help and the police aren't really doing anything about it, and they just keep coming to dead ends. And it's just, it's very sad.
So in your opinion, why do you think this case is unsolved?
To be honest, I don't know. And that's what really is the most tragic thing, is I feel like I don't know. That's my biggest thing. And I don't know if it was some kind of cover up, or if it was just people not coming forward, or I don't know. I can't answer that, because that's been one of my biggest questions, is why is this now a cold case? Like, why can it not be solved? There's been so much that happened, and they've gotten tips, and I believe the original investigator is now the chief of police. So I don't know how there's still no answers. There's rewards. There's been a reward money out there for a couple of months after it happened. They posted the reward money, and you would think that would motivate people to turn someone in. Like, someone somewhere has heard something, and I just wish that someone would come forward and just speak on what they've heard. I mean, any and all leads have to be followed up. So it may seem minute to someone, like, oh yeah, I heard this, but it's probably nothing. But it could be something. I just pray that it becomes a case that is now solved. We can make it cold to solve that. That's all we want. And not that we want revenge or anything like that on who did this. It's just justice for Blake, because he didn't deserve it. And again, to answer your question, I honestly don't know. And that's what's the most devastating part about it, is the fact that there's no reason why it shouldn't be solved.
And for the conclusion of this story, I spoke to Melissa and got her final thoughts on the death of her son.
Back to October the 15th. Blake goes to dinner with his new girlfriend, and they go to homecoming dance. And Blake had asked earlier, before we dropped him off, if he could stay the night with a friend. And I said, I don't know, Blake. That would have been the first time that I had actually let him out of my sight since all of this had started. I said, get your girlfriend's mom to drop you off at your friend's. I said, but as soon as you get there, I want you to call me from their home phone. Do not call me from your friend's cell phone. I want the home phone. Because I had not actually been to this kid's house. I had met him several times before, but I wanted to know where he lived in case anything happened. So Blake did. He calls me and he tells me about his night. And he says it was the best night of my life. And we had so much fun, and all of his new friends that he'd met at East Coweta High School in Noonan. The last thing I told him, I said, well, Blake, you can go ahead and stay with your friend. I said, but please promise me that you won't leave that house. He'd snuck out of the house a couple times before. And that was one of the reasons why I'd said something to him. This was the first time that he had been away from me. And I didn't want to be too strict with him. I wanted to give him some leeway, because I didn't want him to rebel, outright rebel, because he felt, whatever it is, controlled. Or he said, I promise, Mama, I won't. He said, I love you. I said, I love you too, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. And he hung up the phone.
Was that your last conversation with him?
Yes.
Then what happened after that last conversation? He went to a dance or something, is that correct?
Right. His girlfriend had went to homecoming dance earlier in the night. And then her mother dropped him off at the friend's up the street, a couple miles away from her house and from the school to stay the night. And I guess at some point after our conversation, him and the friend decided that they were going to leave the house and walk to the store. Well, there was some confusion about what store, because there was a store like three houses from the friend's house. Well, after a little investigation, I realized that couldn't have been possible because it was 10 o'clock when Blake called me. And at some point after that, they had left the house to go to the store, but that particular store closed at 10. And the friend said that that was the store that they went to, which could not be true. So there was reports that he was seen at another store, which was a couple of miles away. The police say that the person on the CCTV, on the cameras in that store, was not Blake, but I have some friends that knew the owner of that store and actually saw that videotape, and they verified that it was Blake. Now, why the police are saying it wasn't and the friend is saying it absolutely was is beyond me, because when his body was actually found 2 months and 3 days later, the police were trying to tell me that he died sometime the next day, being between Sunday and Monday, the 16th and 17th. And I'm assuming that they were trying to put that out there as fact because they denied him being on camera. Now, when I actually got the coroner's report, his death is listed as unknown. They only know that his body had been in a creek for no more than 3 to 4 days.
Was he beaten?
They won't tell me anything. I've asked if he was run over, if he was beaten, if he was choked, if he had broken bones, if he was missing limbs. I've asked every possible question that you can ask about the condition of my child's body.
Were you able to have a burial for him?
He had to be cremated. The local coroner kept him for 2 weeks, and then the GBI kept him for over a month. And we actually had the service way before they even released his body to us.
I was asking because I figured that if you saw his body, then you might have a better idea of what happened to him by looking at him. But then he probably was so decomposed that you wouldn't have been able to figure anything out anyway.
He was identified by a small, less than 1-inch tattoo on his chest. If he was that badly decomposed, they wouldn't have been able to identify him by a tattoo.
That makes a lot of sense, so I would agree with that. So about the timeline, your son went out with his girlfriend, and then the mom dropped him off at the friend's house. Was it confirmed that he was dropped off at the friend's house?
Yes, because he called me from the friend's house home phone.
Now, what about the person in the other store that was running the register that night? Did you ever get to speak to him? What did he say?
From what I gather, because I didn't get firsthand information about any of that. And like I said, everything has been kept from me by the investigators. Initially, when Blake went missing, my then boyfriend and the kid that he had stayed the night with, the kid had called me the next morning around 11 o'clock. And he said, "Do you know where Blake is?" And I said, "What are you talking about? He stayed the night with you." And I immediately started to panic. He goes, "We went out last night and I gave him directions on how to get to his girlfriend's house and he never came back."
Did Blake's friend even try to stop him from leaving? I mean, I'm surprised he didn't say something along the lines of, "Look, dude, if you leave, I'm calling your mother."
He said that they did get into an argument and that Blake said that he was going to go. I can see that in a couple of different ways because of some other facts. But the kid said, "We don't know where he is." So my boyfriend immediately got up and went and picked the kid up, and they started searching. Well, they came across this police officer, and they explained to him what was going on. I'd called the county that I lived in, I'd called the sheriff's department, and they explained to me that I would need to call Noonan, where he had went missing, instead of the county we lived in. So I immediately called Noonan Police Department and reported my son missing. And around the same time, they had found an officer, and he had called it in, and they, I guess, put out a BOLO for Blake, his description. And my boyfriend explained that within 10 minutes, there was probably 20 police cars everywhere looking. They looked until it got dark, from what I understand.
I really think that the friend should have called you as soon as your son left.
Right. Well, that, and on top of the fact that when Blake left and got to his girlfriend's, he went in the girlfriend's window, and they were sitting on the bed talking, and I guess the grandmother had overheard conversation at the early hours, you know, in the morning, and came in and saw Blake there with his girlfriend, and she went and woke the girlfriend's mother up. Well, the girlfriend's mother was very upset, and the girlfriend explained to me that Blake said, "Do you want me to go ahead and leave now, or do you want me to stay?" Meaning, do you want me to explain myself to your parents, or do you want me to just leave? And the girlfriend said, just go. So Blake left.
What time did Blake leave?
This was when he had stayed the night with the friend, and the friend had given him directions to the girlfriend's house, and he had walked over. The girlfriend's mother said it was probably around 4 a.m. So I don't know how long Blake had been at the girlfriend's house. It was approximately a 3-mile walk from the friend that he stayed the night with.
So then if he left sometime around 4 and it was a 3-mile walk and he never made it to his friend's house, then whatever happened to him must have probably happened between, say, 4 and 5. Whatever happened to him, that's probably when it happened.
Right, because the friend called me the next morning and said, Blake's missing. He never came back from the girlfriend's house.
This would mean that the girlfriend and her mother and grandmother would be the last ones to have seen your son alive. Is that correct?
Right. The girlfriend's mother explained to me that Blake was texting her and he was really upset. And he kept saying, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to disrespect you. And the mother was upset. And she kept telling him, Blake, that was very disrespectful. But they loved Blake. They really did. And this texting went on for about an hour. And he was really upset, texting his girlfriend and her mother back and forth. I'm so sorry. I'll never do that again. And my question was, why did the friend not call me and say, Blake went over to the girlfriend's? But why did the mother not call me and say, I just found your son in my daughter's room?
Or why did Blake's girlfriend's mom not give him a ride back to his friend's house? I mean, it was pitch black. I don't think I would have let him walk home alone at that time of night, but that's just me.
Exactly. Why did she not leave and pick him up? He's walking at 4, 5, 6 a.m. down a road that has no street light. I would have never in a million years allowed a child, boy or girl, to walk knowing that they were just at my house and left walking in the middle of the night.
Do you think there's any possibility that Blake took his own life?
None. And he was not only shot once, he was shot twice.
If he was shot twice, then I guess that would rule out the suicide theory.
He was executed.
To me, this sounds like whoever did this probably knew your son and must have known where your son was at the time. Perhaps the person followed your son.
Blake posted on his social media where he was going to be that day. He was also posting on social media that evening at his friend's house. And Blake had made a post on social media about the stepfather attacking him. And it hurt his pride. He's a 17-year-old boy that just got beat half to death in front of 24 people that he knows, and said that the stepdad hit like a little bitch. And I, when I saw it, I was upset and disappointed. And I immediately went to Blake and said, those are things you don't do. You immediately go in there right now and delete that post. And I don't want to see anything else like that.
When you found out that Blake was missing that morning, how long was it before they found the body?
2 months and 3 days.
And what were the police telling you? Let me guess, don't tell me. They said he ran away.
Exactly. The investigator on the case, oh, he's a runaway. He got scared because of what was going on with court. Almost had me convinced that maybe he did, but I knew better than that. Blake was the happiest he had ever been in his entire life. We lived on 70 acres of property. He had 2 dirt bikes that he was now free to make any trail that he wanted on a huge piece of property. He had a lake. He loved to fish. He had met this girl that he just fell head over heels for. This boy, I'd never seen him so happy. The cops tried to convince me, well, because there's no leads and there's, it had to have been just some random thing, and try basically to convince me of that.
To me, it doesn't sound like a random attack. But who would be out that early in the morning? And it was a gated community. I'm guessing that it wasn't typical for people just to be hanging around that early in the morning. But then it's also a possibility that Blake wasn't killed at that spot. I mean, I don't know how well the police checked the area where he was abducted or killed. I don't know how big the radius of where law enforcement searched was.
They searched within a 50-mile radius.
If he was killed near the girlfriend's house, then there should have been blood in that area. I mean, he was shot, so there would have been blood or some type of biological evidence. But if they didn't find anything, I'm guessing that he was probably abducted and then taken somewhere else. And the place that he was taken is where he was shot to death.
What they won't tell me is how long was he alive before they actually killed him.
I also think that it's possible that there were 2 people, one person to drive the car and the other person to hold him, because he's a 17-year-old kid. If one person takes him, even with a gun, it's going to be hard to drive and hold a gun on him unless perhaps he was thrown into the trunk. But to me, it sounds like there was probably more than one person. That's what I'm guessing. I mean, your son, he's a 17-year-old kid, and he's probably going to at least fight for his life.
He was skinny, but when he would tussle around with his brother, those bones hurt. He was good at defending himself.
Can you tell me about the current investigation? What's going on with it now? I know it's been 10 years, but how often do you call the police and ask, hey, what's going on with this case? Or have you just stopped asking?
I used to call probably twice a week in the very beginning, probably for the first 2 years. After that, I call once a week. But during that, between the second and third year, I rarely got a return phone call. The investigator that was on the missing persons case was promoted when Blake's body was found to the investigator of a homicide, and that was his first homicide.
So you have no idea what's going on with the investigation then?
No.
Now, do you have a Facebook page that's dedicated to Blake, a place for people to send tips to if they have any?
Yeah, we have several. It's hashtag justice for Blake Chappelle. He has a Facebook page. It's just his name, Blake Chappelle.
Have you received any tips?
Supposedly, since I have done a couple of interviews in the last 2 months, the Newnan Police Department launched a website or a section on their website for cold cases. And I spoke with the new person assigned to his case. I say new. He's been on the case for the last 3 years, but I think I've spoken to him maybe twice.
So then the Noonan Police Department is handling this case?
That's correct, because it happened in the city limit.
And that's in Georgia?
Yes, it's Coweta County.
Now I'm going to tell you something else that you probably are going to find disturbing, but after reading about this case and then discussing it more with you and your sister, I'm going to say that there's people in his circle that know who did this, and they've known about it and held on to this for the past 10 years. And they're not saying anything because I'm guessing that maybe they've been threatened. So they didn't say anything back then, but it's 10 years later and they're all adults now. They've got families. They've got their own kids. So maybe there's a possibility that one of them will hear this or see something on TV and decide, hey, it's been 10 years. It's time for me to step up and do the right thing and help this family out and help Blake's family get justice. So what do you think about that? Would you agree with my assessment on this? And if so, does it disappoint you to think that one of these friends that has been in your home, that has maybe sat at your dinner table, would know something and not say anything all these years later? If so, that has to be disappointing.
What hurts me really bad is that a mutual friend of Blake's and his older brother told me and my mother, Blake's grandmother, that everybody knew who killed Blake, but nobody could tell us because their lives would be in danger.
Exactly. And I'm sure that they've been threatened and that they're terrified, but they were kids back then. And that means that these people have been holding on to this information for 10 years. So what you have to do is you've got to get this story out through social media, through interviews, through podcasts. You need to get the story out as much as you can so that the right person will hear it and feel compelled to say something and go to law enforcement, even if they do it anonymously. So with that being said, let me ask you this last question. For anybody out there that's listening to this, if they know anything about what happened to your son, Blake, what would you say to that person or persons?
Think about if it was your brother. Think about if it was your dad or your mom or anyone that you loved that this was done to. This is somebody's child. This is somebody's grandchild. And this would have been somebody's uncle and brother. Do what's right. Give the family a little bit of closure. I just want to know why. I've had to forgive a faceless murderer for my own sake. Why him? Why?
And that concludes the story of Blake Chappelle. What happened to this young man? He was a 17-year-old teenager whose life hadn't even started. Before he vanished, he had just told his mother that he had the best day of his life. Little did he know, he would have the worst day of his life just hours later after speaking to his mother for the final time. If you are listening and wondering why this case should bother you, I will tell you why. In 2011, it was Blake Chappelle who was murdered. Tomorrow or today, this could easily be your son or daughter. They could attend a dance or a football game and never return home. Melissa and Sabrina loved this young man. He meant the world to them. If you are listening to this podcast, I'm personally pleading with you to come forward with a tip that will break this case wide open. You can even leave an anonymous tip if you so choose. What if this happens to your teenager sometime down the road? Wouldn't you want answers? There are people out there who know exactly what happened to Blake, and they need to help bring peace to Melissa Chappelle and give her the answers that she needs. If you have any information about this case that could help the family of Blake Chappelle get justice, please contact the Noonan Police at 770-254-2355, or you can contact Crime Stoppers of Greater Atlanta at 404-577-8477. Those who provide tips can remain anonymous, and there is also a reward for information leading to an arrest in Blake's case. And you can also visit the Justice for Blake Chappelle Facebook page for more information about this young man. I will also provide this information in the story notes. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form, or contact me through Facebook. Thank you for listening.